On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My goodness, looky here, a new broadcast week begins. It is the 25th day of August, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find access to The Horn chat room. I'm going there now, as a matter of fact. That's also where you go to get the pop-out player, which is the easiest way to grab the stream if you're listening on some sort of old PC laptop type, more traditional computer device. If, however, you are listening on an iThis or a Smart That, we recommend the apps from either Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. Either of those works quite well, with the caveat, of course, that's always out there. With the caveat that any ads you may see, especially the obnoxious, odious ones, are not for the benefit of the Horn or placed by the Horn or in any way supportive of the Horn. When TuneIn and Stitcher sell ads, that benefits TuneIn and Stitcher and does not in any way go to support what we're doing here or in any way help keep us on the air. Okie doke. So if there's some sort of obnoxious ExxonMobil ad or something like that, we didn't have anything to do with it, and we would never accept advertising dollars from someone as odious and noxious as ExxonMobil. Clear? Cool. Apart from that, though, they work great. No, in fact, the horn is it exists solely on listener contributions. A dollar at a time, $5 at a time. We try to raise $150 per evening, and that's where we find ourselves this evening. Last week, toward the end of the program on Friday, our indefatigable chat room and Horn Malloy Skype chat moderator Sparky put forward the Sparky's Double Down Challenge, and Don has a package of magnificent jalapeno pistachios on the way to him from the pistachio-growing region of Northern California. By the way, I did check in with Sparky prior to airtime just to make sure. He never felt a thing from the 6.0 magnitude earthquake that rocked the Northern Bay Area. I have a feeling that, the same cannot be said for friends of ours like Larry in Berkeley and maybe Tom in Richmond. Richard and a couple of other folks. So it's unnerving to see stuff like that, isn't it? But we hope everyone is okay. I'm trying to think if I've ever even felt one. I don't think so. Tornadoes, hurricanes, derechos, yeah, got that. No earthquakes. Well, no reports of overt disaster, and we're happy to know that. Let's see. Like I said, chat room's a fun, interactive way to go about participating in the program, and folks are already wandering in for more in Monday. Good evening, Bean. Good evening, M. Brandt. Good evening, Pippi. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Will in Chicago, as well as chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Hope you're feeling better, Lottie. I think Lottie's been a little under the weather. Yeah, yeah, Sparky says, believe it, Bob, you'd remember if you'd felt an earthquake. Not the kind of thing you forget. No, not at all. So anyway, the fundraising goal for the evening is what it often is, you know, when we haven't crawled into a hole or dug ourselves a hole. It's $150, so hopefully we will clear that sooner rather than later. It'll be the last that I say this. If it doesn't happen, I'll mention it periodically. I'm sorry. But, you know the drill. 150 once, two at 75, six at 25, right, three at 50, 15 at 10, 10 at 15. Pretty much, that's how it rolls. So hopefully, like I said, that'll happen in fairly short order. Now, this is the beginning of a new broadcast week, which means that we always begin the program week, the broadcast week, with a review of right-wing stupidity from the previous one. And this week is no different. No. Mm-mm. I mean, they're just things that, well, they're... The universe operates in a certain way, and there's not much we can do about it.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. You will not believe your senses. You will not believe the transmissions of the firing of neurons from the interior core of your brain all the way out from the auditory nerve and thenceward. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. For less than 5 cents an hour of programming, you too can behold, can witness, can experience the full-on moranity of the right wing. Right here behind me, behind this thin veil of cybernetic canvas, you will hear right-wing morans, Republican morans, John Bircher morans, libertarian morans, birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters, morans, all of them. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills and you'll be up to your armpits and morans. Oh, Lord, it's true, it is true, it is true. We have them in wild profusion today, when you get right down to it. But as the tagline goes from that old game show, Andrea Tantaros, come on down. I first became aware of Andrea Tantaros when I realized that she was the canned, delivered via satellite right-wing blatherer who had replaced the local blatherer who gave us so many happy hours of moranity over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia. And maybe it is the fifth smallest, maybe it's not. I think, whatever. She gets beamed in by satellite to fulminate her outrage 5 days a week over in that there little old itsy bitsy market. And I've heard her a few times, and she has never impressed me with being particularly pay-ite-bray, if you o-nay what I in-may. But wow, she kind of outdid herself. Now, understand, when you get yourself a gig on Fox Radio Rwanda, that means you're also going to be doing some guesting over on Fox News TV Rwanda, such as the case with Andrea Tantaros. Oh, dear God. No, really.
the discussion on one of these Fox panel programs was in the way of trying to understand and things like references to Plato's allegory of the cave in the Republic come to mind. It had to do with Fox's panel trying to understand just exactly what was going on in Ferguson, Missouri, and apparently, since they're all deep and abiding believers in states' rights, they were upset to find out. Wait, how'd the preacher voice sneak into this? It just happens, I guess. But they were quite upset to find out that the FBI is investigating police actions in Ferguson, Missouri. Now, normal people, ordinary people, people with functioning brains might say, maybe it's because there's a history of racism in the police departments in and around St. Louis, Missouri, or Missouri, depending on if you're from there. What do I mean? Well, one community, and I can't offhand remember which one it was, just look it up, you'll find it. One community's police department was entirely shut down. Every last member of the police force was canned, and from the leadership down, to try to rebuild it because of an ongoing pattern and practice of, like, there's racism that's not nasty, really nasty racism. One young and eager member of the police force of that community who lost his job was a brand new, fresh out of the academy officer of the law, protector of the peace, defending and serving, by the name of Darren Wilson. Well, some of the members of that particular force were able to hire back on to the force. Others had to go looking for a job. Darren Wilson was one of the ones who had to go looking for a job. He found one in Ferguson, Missouri. And we know how that... What? We know that that wound up having not particularly salutary outcomes for a young man named Michael Brown. Enter Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and Andrea Tanteros. Oh, God, here we go. Now, these are some real wiseacres, apparently. I mean, it's a program called The Five. I don't know why. Don't ask. Why it's not the 3 or the 12 or the Avogadro. I don't know. It's probably not Avogadro's number because there's decimals involved. But that would be a cool Fox show, wouldn't it? The Avogadro. Is that one of them immigrants? Sooner or later, I'm going to have to run this. I've already heard it. That's why I'm trying to avoid it. But all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. So you'll hear some angry white male voices, but you'll know when it's Andrea Tanteros' turn to talk. Oh, by the way, I realize it's kind of early in the program to be issuing this, but go ahead and get the duct tape and the hockey puck, would you? Now, people of milder constitutions might still be using the duct tape and the tennis ball, but the hard cases in the Horn family commune have long since opted for duct tape and hockey puck. Got it? Okay, good. Here we go. You're going to love this.
That's what I think.
Can I move on to this? Because this is important. We want to get this out there. Equally as disturbing is how the liberal media takes this BS in hook, line, and sinker. Check out these magazine covers. Mind you, we haven't heard a word under oath about the hands-up claims made by Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers. But look at that. That's The New Yorker. That's Bloomberg and Time. All.
Why see this, huh?
What this genius is focusing on at this point are the covers of The New Yorker, Time Magazine, Bloomberg News, all of which bear a depiction in one form or another of persons of color with their hands up, hoping not to be shot during the police riot in Ferguson, Missouri. You did notice who comprises the liberal media, right?
Magazine covers. Mind you, we haven't heard a word under oath about the hands-up claims made by Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers. But look at that.
Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers. Both of him. The white fear, the white horror, the white terror just steams off of these right-wingers like steam. It rises off of them like steam off of fresh right out there in the yard because the neighbors won't keep their dog in there on their own property. Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers. Sounds like a Saturday morning cartoon, doesn't it? Well, there's a reason for that. Because these apologists for fascist authoritarianism over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they see the world as a sort of cartoon. Everybody is slightly less real than they are. Their concerns are real, and Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers were just, what are some of the words? Race baiting, race hustling. Yeah. And the intellectual dishonesty involved in just those first 15 seconds of audio are enough to send you screaming as you reach for the hockey puck. There has not been a bit of sworn testimony taken. So, in other words, in the world inhabited by these white folks, the testimony has to be sworn to before it can be broadcast or given any kind of credibility. Has to be sworn to. Preferably in front of a nice white judge. Some nice white jurors. Has to be sworn to. And we don't know what has or has not been sworn to. He cannot say for a fact that it hasn't been. Witness statements may have been taken. But we do know that the word quickly spread because the witness testimony was fairly consistent that by the time Darren Wilson blew the life out of Michael Brown, Michael Brown had his hands up and was obviously unarmed. But through the magic of language and unsworn and making reference to Al, Jesse, and the new Black Panthers, oh, God, let's just go on with it, because we haven't even gotten to Andrea Tanteros yet. And she, by God, is the nominee here, not these goobers.
That's The New Yorker, that's Bloomberg, and Time, all with covers. Greg, hands up. Are they trying this case before we have anyone's even sworn in yet?
But this goes back to you win Pulitzers with pictures like that. You don't win Pulitzers in times of calm.
You know what? If a photographer had been there, he might win a Pulitzer with the picture of Michael Brown on his knees with his hands up being blown away by Darren Wilson. That would be pretty Pulitzer-y, wouldn't it?
It's like you saw the media before. They were reporting on, you know, fear of unrest. And now it's how long will the calm last? Now they've shifted gears, and now they're heading back.
Okay, you win Pulitzers. You sell magazines with pictures like that. But is it...
Okay, so the video's moved over to Andrea Tanteros, who apparently has a deep and abiding desire to be Ann Coulter. Except her... Do you have the hockey puck? I'm telling you, you want the hockey puck.
Is it dangerous to be putting those on the cover?
Yeah, because you sell magazines with racial divides, right? You sell magazines by blowing up what, in their minds, is a white-on-black incident. Where you really could do good journalism is going to the streets of Chicago and following...
Yeah. Has Chicago become some sort of obligatory reference for these right-wing morons? Because Chicago is a dog whistle word now for that one in our White House. You know, he ruined Chicago before he ever come to D.C. and ruined America. So she wants all the journalisms not to have been in, you know, Ferguson, Missouri. Because there's never going to be any good journalism done in Ferguson, Missouri. She wants all the journalisms to get out of Ferguson and get over to Chicago.
Following the black-on-black crime. I mean, and if I were African-American, I would be outraged that more journalists aren't covering what's happening in Chicago and more outraged.
It's kind of tough to stop this because the woman never pauses. She starts talking and doesn't take a breath. But there is something absolutely delightful about a woman who is probably making in the high six figures saying, and if I was a black woman, I'd be outraged about Chicago, not about the killing of an unarmed young African-American teenager. That's what I'd be upset about. Not Ferguson, Missouri. I'd be upset about Chicago because I would understand that Kenyan Muslim usurper with the deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies is destroying America. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's visual, but it's funny. The happy hippie billy just sent me three images regarding Al Jesse and the new Black Panthers. I just got three images in the email box. One of Al Bundy, one of Jesse Ventura, and the Panther character from Disney's animated classic, The Jungle Book. Al Jesse and the New Black Panther. Oh, God. There's our first toaster. I'm sorry, Embrant. Embrant's worried in the chat room. Bob, you're beginning to really sound like them without hardly trying. Be careful or their mind control may work on you. Okay, so back to, because we're not, all right. She's not going to take a breath, so we're just going to have to take her in one big dose.
That, but is it dangerous to be putting those on the cover?
Yeah, because you sell magazines with racial divides, right? You sell magazines by blowing up
now, wait,
in their
mind.
Stop. It's a white-on-black incident.
I said I was going to just let her go. But what? You sell magazines with racial divides? I mean, I understand that that's a broad and sweeping statement, but that's too broad for broad. Modern Bride sells magazines on a racial divide? Highlights for Children sells magazines with a racial divide? Field and Stream? Racial divide? Oh, mother. All right, let's try this again. But did you notice the question that gets her going? But is it dangerous? Yeah, see, because Fox is all concerned about America's safety. That's why they put Bill O'Reilly on the air to holler Tiller the Killer until someone blew away Dr. Tiller at church one Sunday. And by someone, I mean some right-winger who spent a lot of time listening to Fox. And Fox is suddenly concerned about the public wheel after their guy Glenn Beck almost created a terrorist attack on the Tides Foundation. You know what? You know what Fox doesn't really have? Fox doesn't have a mascot. And it shouldn't be a fox. Fox needs a little mascot, and it should be some sort of, you know, fuzzy, hairy concern troll. That would be really cute at the same time. Isn't it dangerous? Isn't it dangerous to put pictures on magazine covers that suggest that maybe we still have an inequality program and perhaps occasionally, okay, more than occasionally, the police blow away unarmed people? Isn't that dangerous? We're only concerned.
Now they've shifted gears and now they're heading back.
Okay, you win Pulitzers, you sell magazines with pictures like that, but is it dangerous to be putting those on the cover?
Yeah, because you sell magazines with racial divides, right? You sell magazines by blowing up what in their minds is a white on black incident. Where you really could do good journalism is going to the streets of Chicago and...
Wait a minute, what in the hell does that mean? By blowing up what is in their minds a white on black incident? Did I miss the press release about the publication of Darren Wilson's new autobiography, Black Like Me? In their minds? One more time. See, that I've heard this 6 or 7 times today. And it's an onion. You peel away a layer, and look, more onion. You peel away a layer, and more onion. Ugh.
Following the black-on-black crime. I mean, and if I were African-American, I would be outraged that more journalists aren't covering what's happening in Chicago and more...
Okay. Maybe it's not the Darren Wilson autobiography, Black Like Me. Maybe it's the Andrea Tanteros updating of Soul on Ice. I don't, but the Goddess of Irony does. The Goddess of Irony loves privileged white folks saying, now, if I were a Negro, if I were a black man, no. Go on, Andrea. Do go on.
outraged that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson don't head to those areas. But look, the DOJ is pushing this entire thing. Eric Holder is one of the biggest race baiters in this entire country. He runs that DOJ like the Black Panthers, allowing them to be out.
There it is. Shall we just shut the program down now and give Moran Monday to Andrea Tanteros and say it is impossible that anybody could possibly outdo that? Let me check the chat room and see if there's any screaming going on. Eric Holder runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. Yeah. You saw the footage of Eric Holder in Ferguson, Missouri, there with his black leather jacket on, holding up, just like the Mexico City Olympics in 1968, just holding up his fist in that black power salute. Yeah, John noting in the chat room. What? The DOJ is providing free breakfast? Haley in the chat room. Oh my God, to Black Panther Party. And when we open up the phone lines and everything, I would like to have a conversation about this. I would actually like your input on this. And I don't very often say this, because most of the time the telephone, the conversational aspect of this program is whatever y'all want to talk about. You know, out there in the wider world of so-called talk radio, there's a screener, and if you don't want to talk about what the host wants to talk about, you know, you don't get on the air. So we talk about what y'all want to talk about. But in this case, I would actually like to have your input on this specific point. What does that mean, Eric Holder runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers? Because I honest to God don't know. It's like sometimes I understand the dog whistling. Sometimes, not so much. Sometimes I just hold up the code book with the secret decoder ring and I turn and I understand, but sometimes it's nope. It's just like my magic eight ball. Answer hazy. Ask again later. How are the Black Panthers run? It was my understanding. It was rather a democratic movement. Yeah, Bean in the chat room noting, geez, it's getting to the point where a fella can't even feel proud to be white anymore. Thanks, Fox. Pippi, New York City. He runs the DOJ like the Black Panther Party. The DOJ only has one attorney standing on a corner yelling? No, that's the new Black Panther Party. It only takes one to terrify an entire audience of some several millions in the United States. You realize that? You realize the mileage that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda has gotten out of the new Black Panther Party? There's a million Americans who are quaking at home in fear and running around buying guns and making sure they have plenty of ammo. Because of a picture of a dude in a voting precinct in Philly they saw one time several years ago. No, really, what does that mean? He runs the DOJ like the Black Panther Party. It's like something I saw earlier today over at Blue Nation Review. You know, there's been this proliferation, this promulgation of, and it seems to kind of run hand in hand with Facebook-y stuff, because it's all about getting traction in social media now. So I saw this article from Blue Nation Review, and I had already seen the story last week, and I didn't get to it, so we'll do this real quick. It's a story out of, and this is important, Florida. I might add that there is not even so much as a molehill of the Appalachian Mountains in Florida. I'm pretty certain of that. With that having been said, the story was another story of freedom and the glories brought to us by the Second Amendment. It's the story of a granny in Florida. And granny was apparently, come on, you want to, anybody, odds. Well, anybody want to guess at the odds that granny in this story is a Fox News, radio, TV, Rwanda viewer, listener? Because if I understand correctly, granny had a freedom protector in her home. Wolverines! Because she never knew when maybe the new Black Panther Party was going to come barreling through her door. Right? Also in her home, she had her little grandsons. I don't have all the details on that, but yeah. But she watched the little boys. They slept over at her house by night, or she was at their house, whatever, while the boy's daddy worked the night shift. And she was trying to be a good granny, I reckon, and was sitting there ready to protect the estate and the family and, well, you know, Wolverines and Second Amendment, and got to keep an arm bears because this is a violent world. Wayne LaPierre done said it. You never know when you're going to have to stand your ground. When the little boys went to bed, she blocked the bedroom door with a chair. Don't ask. And later in the evening, one of the little boys had to get up in the night and go pee-pee. And so when she heard the chair that was against the door move, she took her freedom protector out and started shooting. And she shot her own grandson. Mercifully, the grandchild is going to survive, having been nearly blown away by Grandma.
But Grandma, what large bullets you have.
Once again, another story about how anybody who can get to a gun show can own a firearm in this country. No psychological evaluation, no screening. Are you crazy? No, I'm not, and neither am I. Well, here's your gun. Waiting period? The waiting period? In the time you're waiting for your handgun, the jackbooted thugs of the government might get their jackboots on your neck, and there goes your freedom. So that's the story of Florida granny shooting her little grandson because the door being moved meant that, you know, there were intruders. Intruder alert, right? But that's not even the thrust. So the story over at Blue Nation Review by, what's your name? David Jamarella. David Jamarella wrote, when she heard the chair by the door slide, she automatically thought intruder and shot at the dark doorway. I'm just saying I hear banjo music playing. Now, why do I mention this in the context of Andrea Tanteros and Moran Monday? Because I don't know what that means either. I must have the wrong decoder ring. Or maybe I do know what that means. I'm just saying I hear banjo music playing. He runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. See, both of these are phrases that are meant to be immediately understood by people who are inside that individual universe of bias. Okay? They're different universes. He runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. As far as I can tell, it actually has no meaning. It's like celery. Celery is so nutritionally vacant that it takes more calories to digest celery than are released into your body. It's so you know, celery is a net negative, caloric-wise. Well, these two phrases are celery. They have no actual meaning. They actually manage to detract from meaningful discussion instead of adding to it. She automatically thought intruder and shot at the dark doorway. I'm just saying I hear banjo music playing. What that's actually, we can unpack it. Just like we can unpack, he runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers. What I'm just saying I hear banjo music playing is that's supposed to be a sly reference to Deliverance, the 1970s film about a rafting trip, a canoe trip gone bad in the North Georgia mountains of Appalachia. And there's banjo music. Dueling banjos, as a matter of fact. And there's a bunch of creepy, dangerous, inbred Appalachian people. which is what's his name here? David Jamarella wants you to think. Over at Blue Nation Review. That only ignorant Appalachian people shoot their family members with their firearms and wrapped into that there's some incest and some inbreeding and ignorance and poverty, because nobody ever gets hurt with a firearm who doesn't like banjo music. I kind of lit up on this one because I'm sensitive to it. Not far from here, there's a rafting company, that welcomes tourists to this area that traffics in a T-shirt with the same idea. Their T-shirt says, "Paddle faster, I hear banjo music." Because what that means is you're going to wind up being like Ned Beatty in Deliverance, who is raped by the conscienceless inbred hillbillies. Paddle faster, I hear banjo music. He runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers. See, I don't like this stuff generally. But at least I have a better working understanding. I said I didn't know what I hear banjo music meant, but just sitting here processing behind the microphone, obviously I do. Just like obviously I understand what he runs the DOJ like the Black Panther Party means. Or the Black Panthers means. It means that the Department of Justice has somehow been overtaken by wild-eyed, radical, dark-skinned people. And that somehow or another, therefore, there is no more Department of Justice, that the Department of Justice has been ruined, that if only we had the Department of Justice that we had back when, by God, J. Edgar Hoover was running the FBI, by God, that was an America we could all be proud of. When the FBI was bugging the phones of Dr. King. Those were the great days of America. But now that Eric Holder, and I'm no Eric Holder fan, okay? But this is just stupid. Now that we have that Eric Holder, there is no more justice in America because the Department of Justice is being run like the Black Panthers. Wow, just wow. Okay, let's back up on that clip just a second. Let it sink all the way in.
If I were African American, I would be outraged that more journalists aren't covering what's happening in Chicago, and more outraged that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson don't head to those areas. But look, the DOJ is pushed.
You know what, Andrea? Don't let us stop you. Totter on out the door there in New York City at the home of Fox News. Get yourself a plane ticket and fly to Chicago and be a journalist, Andrea, and report to us on the black-on-black crime in Chicago. You see, this is one of those false equivalences in which they not only truck, but excel. that somehow or another, because journalists actually photographed and artists did art about what was going on in Ferguson, Missouri, that somehow or another, the journalism is a zero-sum game in which whatever quantum of reporting about black-on-black crime in Chicago had somehow been consumed for all time by virtue of the fact that the media covered instead of covering up the police riot in Ferguson, Missouri. Now we'll never know. We will never know about black-on-black crime in Chicago because all the journalism got worn out and used up in Ferguson, Missouri. When you hear stuff like this, do you do what I do and just wonder about the people who hear this and look at each other and nod there in the matching Barca loungers? Yep, absolutely. Runs that DOJ just like the Black Panthers. I could have told you when we elected that one. Well, I mean, I didn't elect him, but some other people did, probably by fraudulent voting.
And if I were African-American, I would be outraged that more journalists aren't covering what's happening in Chicago, and more outraged that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson don't head to those areas. But look, the DOJ is pushing this entire thing. Eric Holder is one of the biggest race baiters in this entire country. He runs that DOJ like the Black Panthers, allowing them to be outside of that polling place was absolutely abominable.
Can I somewhat agree with Andrew, and maybe not call him a race baiter, but maybe call him, it might be, race activist? Is that okay?
A nation of cowards? You know what, Eric? He said a nation of cowards. The 350,000 Americans that died in the Civil War, I think that they're probably not cowards.
Just get a quick response?
Why he did that?
Did I miss that? Andrea, I know you listen to the program. I'm the one that says we're a coward nation. But every time I say that, Andrea, I try to spell it so ignorant idiots like you won't misunderstand. We are a coward nation. We are a COWERED nation. We hope that if we just stay home and keep our heads down, and don't fight City Hall, and don't pay attention to the devolution of the culture around us brought on by the concentration of wealth in less than 1% of the population of this country, that somehow or another it'll all be okay. Meanwhile, earlier today I found out from my good friend Paulette, who is the documentarian behind that documentary To Wisconsin with Love, in which I was honored to be involved. I find out that her hometown, where she teaches school, Harrisonburg, Virginia, which is home to a high population of Mennonites, by the way, who are pacifists. Harrisonburg, Virginia, now has a great big up-armored MRAP vehicle just like St. Louis does. Harrisonburg, Virginia, with the Mennonites, who ride to church in freaking buggies. Yeah. Coward nation, COWERED. Anybody want to find me? I'd love to see it. Anybody want to direct me to the clip or even article about, as long as it doesn't come from Town Hall or Wingnut Daily or Newsmuck or the Washington Examiner or the Mooney Times or any of that, because that's just those are just unreliable. Well, it's written by people who didn't get the message about not taking the brown acid, where Eric Holder said America is a nation of cows. What?
Allowing them to be outside of that polling place was absolutely abominable.
I somewhat agree with Andrew, and maybe not call him a race baiter, but maybe call him, it might be, race activist? Is that okay?
A nation of cowards? You know what, Eric? He said a nation of cowards. The 350,000 Americans that died in the Civil War, I think that they're probably not cowards.
Can I just get quick responses from you?
Okay, a couple of things. One, the 350,000 Americans who died in the Civil War. I need to know whether she's counting the Confederates or not. Because they weren't Americans. They were Confederates. They had deliberately seceded from the Union. They had stopped being Americans. Let's get that straight. That's not philosophy. That's not a matter of opinion. That's them. Okay? They weren't Americans anymore. But, okay, so that's quibbling with history. I really, really want to know about this business of saying that America is a nation of cowards. I'm pretty sure he didn't say it before he became Attorney General, because that would have been sufficient to keep him from becoming Attorney General. Now, granted, before he became Attorney General, he did participate in a plea deal that allowed the board of directors of Chiquita Banana, who signed on to and had full knowledge of a murder-for-hire scheme in Colombia, he let them skate. He was their counsel, the Bush administration had the DOJ, and they both sat down and said, now, it'd be a real shame to send these good, fine, upstanding American citizens to prison for accessory before the fact to freaking murder. But we can't have that. I mean, these are good people, right? He did that. That didn't keep him from becoming Attorney General. But had he said America, you know what, if he had said America is a nation of cowards, do you reckon that bold defender of his administration would not have asked for Eric Holder's resignation? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he really, really did say it. I'm just skeptical. But if somebody's got, let me know. But let's go back.
Guys, so the magazines sit in convenience stores, in 7-Elevens across the country. Our kids walk in and they see that stuff. Are our kids being affected? Are our youth being affected by those covers?
Yeah, that's why the media matters. I mean, they have a huge impact, and
Okay, all right. So, Isaac, I'm gonna ask you to take one for the team, please, because this came. I don't have Twitter. Email me that link, would you? Apparently, there is a YouTube link. We'll have to examine this. Oh, by the way, on the day that people gathered to mourn and officially provide a funeral service for Michael Brown, the New York Times published a piece in which they said, you know, he could very well have been on the wrong track. He had been experimenting with drugs and had taken to rapping. No, really. Did nobody at the New York Times ever have a mama? Because mamas are largely the repositories of good advice, like mind your own business and don't speak ill of the dead. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Isaac. You did that awfully fast. We gotta sort this out. Nation of cowards. Description on YouTube, it's a clip from CNN. Attorney General Eric Holder says America has yet to come to grips with its racial past. Or its racial present. Hmm? Okay.
One cannot truly understand America without understanding the historical experience of black people in this nation. Simply put, to get to the heart of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards. Though race-related issues continue to occupy a significant portion of our political discussion, and though there remain many unresolved racial issues in this nation, we, average Americans, simply do not talk enough with each other about things racial.
And there it is. So no, he did not say that America is a nation of cowards. That was what he said was couched in all kinds of the prefatory and precatory language that made it clear that he was speaking about a specific topic. And you know what? I agree with him. I think most of us in the Horn Family Commune congregation do. You might recall the piece I shared with you, a week ago from Leonard Pitts, writing in the Miami Herald, where he said that in late elementary school we need a really, really honest, forthright class about race and class divides and ethnic divides, in an effort to get us, and he said, and not sugarcoating it. Because it's a lot harder to hate someone once you have had some degree of immersion in that person's culture. That's what this is. But no. Over there at the Five, all they know is that guy who runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers. They're coming for your white granny. He said America was a nation of cowards. And now I understand a little bit better how this whole thing plays out. This whole segment on this Fox program was designed around letting Andrea Tanteros say what she said. And even the "he runs the DOJ like the Black Panthers" was not the central argument. The whole thing was a setup for her to say that. Because the nonagenarian millions who watch Fox are sitting at home, "Hey, you hear that, Marvelline? That Eric Holder doesn't love America. He says we're a nation of cowards." We weren't cowards. We weren't cowards at Pearl Harbor, were we? Uh-uh. No. And we weren't cowards when we firebombed Tokyo, were we? Cowards don't do that. And we weren't cowards when we dropped those first atomic bombs on civilian populations in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Wasn't very cowardly, that was it?
Emery, I think it's time for your shot.
Yeah, ever so much clearer. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. This is what that means. You know how right-wing tools are always being taken out of context? This is what being taken out of context really means. Eric Holder delivers a speech in which he says we are cowardly in our approach to and our discussions of and our willingness to consider our racial past and our racial present and the history that race has played inside the United States, and says it couched in all those terms. And yeah, Ron, you absolutely, 100%, spot on. And all Andrea Tanteros can hear is, "He said we're a nation of cowards." Thank you, Isaac. Thank you for providing that clarity. We're going to finish this clip, or I'm going to bust in the process.
Andrew, maybe not call him a race baiter, but maybe call him a race activist. Is that?
Stop. T- Can we unpack that one too? There are phrases, there are linguistic devices that have been thrown around so much that they become linguistic celery. And even progressive people, left-wing people, you know, decent human beings, we hear race baiter and we go, another right-winger. What does that mean? Because anytime someone says that there is an element of race involved in an incident or a transaction or whatever, there's always a right-winger yanking his pillowcase off his head, hollering, well, there goes a race baiter. And we blow by it. And you know what? Even that phrase became so worn out that they had to move over, and I think we have to credit Bill O'Reilly for this. He ratcheted it up a notch to race hustler. Because we all understand that hustlers are by definition dishonest. They're con men. Race baiter. Anybody, and see, because the right wing are deeply offended in this country that there are those of us who insist that we really should be having the discussion. That we really do have to talk about the history of this country. That even if your great grandpappy came to America after the Civil War, that does not negate the fact that race remains the central defining element of this country. The fact that the foundational statement of principle, as embodied in the Declaration of Independence, had to specifically avoid race issues should tell us an abundance, but not the right wing. Oh, no, not the right wing. Never. Because, see, there's no such racism in right-wing America anymore. By the way, did I mention that this entire panel is Lily White?
Okay, is that a nation of cowards?
You know what, Eric? He said a nation of cowards. The 350,000 Americans that died in the Civil War, I think that they're probably not cowards.
Can I just get quick responses from you guys?
God, I don't ever want to be around that woman when she's drunk and argumentative. Because she's like leaning forward and she's pointing that little finger and you. Yeah, I don't think you even need me. Well, let me just tell you, you don't understand America. We don't have any race problems in America anymore. It's all about freedom. As long as you've got a gun, you're very free in America. Race baiter.
The magazines sit on in convenience stores, in 7-Elevens across the country. Our kids walk in and they see that stuff. Are our kids being affected? Are our youth being affected by those covers?
Yeah, that's why the media matters. I mean, they have a huge impact, and I don't like them either. But yes, of course it matters, and that's why it's so striking. If it turns out that the police officer did indeed have injuries as described by some of the reports, I don't know if he'll actually make it on the cover of any of those
magazines. That's a great point. If he does, are they going to put the shot of his, or his medical shot? Bob, you want to comment on this before we go?
No.
Okay, right.
Good. That's enough. Now, all of this Sturm und Drang, thank you to News Ninja Gene, by the way. Civil War facts, still don't know what that 350,000 she's talking about is. then again, you can just make stuff up and be on Fox. Okay. Civil War facts. When was the Civil War fought? Where was the Civil War fought? How many soldiers fought in the Civil War? 2,128,948 in the Union, 1,082,119 in the Confederacy. All right, I guess even that's unclear. How many soldiers died in the Civil War? 620,000, according to a study from 1889. But I don't know if that's 620,000 American soldiers, or is that 620,000 the total of American soldiers and un-American soldiers? Don't know. So all of this, and we'll end the filibuster in just a moment. All of this against the following backdrop. Caroli, or Caroli, over at Crooks and Liars, who does tremendous work, has the story at Crooks and Liars of a man named Charles Belk. Charles Belk posted something on Facebook that went around quite virally the other day. Charles Belk was in Hollywood, California. And he was suddenly accosted by and arrested by and put in custody by the Hollywood, California Police Department. In truly Kafkaesque fashion, Charles Belk had no idea why. Over on his Facebook page, he posted the following: when you fit the description. It's one of those things that you hear about but never think would happen to you. On Friday afternoon, August the 22nd, around 5:20 p.m., while innocently walking by myself from a restaurant on Wilshire Boulevard to my car up La Cienega, I don't live there, Boulevard, my freedom was taken from me by the Beverly Hills Police Department. Oh, God, don't tell Andrea Tantaro, she'll call him a race baiter. Within seconds, I was detained and told to sit on the curb of the very busy street during rush hour traffic. Within minutes, I was surrounded by six police cars, handcuffed very tightly, fully searched for weapons, and placed back on the curb. Within an hour, I was transported to the Beverly Hills Police Headquarters, photographed, fingerprinted, and put under a $100,000 bail and accused of armed bank robbery and accessory to robbery of a Citibank. Within an evening, I was wrongly arrested, locked up, denied a phone call, denied explanation of charges against me, denied ever being read my rights, denied being able to speak to my lawyer for a lengthy time, and denied being told that my car had been impounded, all because I was misidentified as the wrong tall, bald-head, black male fitting the description. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know at the time that I was a law-abiding citizen of the community and that in my 51 years of existence had never been handcuffed or arrested for any reason. All they saw was someone fitting the description. Doesn't matter if he's a K. Diggs black, an LL Cool J black, or a Drake black. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know that I was an award-nominated and award-winning business professional, most recently being recognized by the Los Angeles Bureau Business Journal at their Nonprofit and Corporate Citizenship Awards. They didn't need to because they saw someone fitting the description. Yeah, it wasn't Hollywood. It was Beverly Hills. I'm sorry. Thank you, Marty. Thank you for the update. Beverly Hills, PD, swimming pools, movie stars. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know that I was a well-educated American citizen that had received a B.S. in electrical engineering from the University of Southern California, an MBA from Indiana University, including a full consortium fellowship to business school, and an executive leadership certificate from Harvard Business School. Hey, I was tall, bald, male, and black, so I fit the description. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know that I was a consultant for the NAACP, a film and TV producer, a previous VP of marketing for a wireless application company, VP of integrated promotions for a marketing agency, ran community affairs for the Atlanta Hawks, was the deputy director of Olympic Village operations for the 1996 Atlanta Olympic Games, was a test quality manufacturing engineering manager for IBM, and was a bond trader on Wall Street. Surely folks that fit the description wouldn't qualify as any of those. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know that throughout my entire life I have been very active in serving the communities that I've lived in, including chapter president and national PR chair for NSBE, a USC student senator, a USC Trojan Knight, a USC engineering student council member, a USC black students council member, and a resident assistant, as well as a founding board member of the RTP-NBMBAA, a member of Durham County Transportation Advisory Board, Durham City County Planning Commission, Atlanta House of Love for the Homeless Board, Cobb County Transportation Advisory Board, Georgia CASA Board, United Way of Greater Atlanta VIP Selection Committee, Gernandi Theater Board, Silver Lake Film Festival Board, Downtown L.A. Film Festival Board, Chaka Khan Foundation, Fundraising Dinner Committee, and the USC Black Alumni Association Board. No, not a black male, especially a tall, bald one. I get that the Beverly Hills Police Department didn't know that just hours earlier I was at one of the finest hotels in their city, handling celebrity talent at an Emmy Awards gifting suite as part of business as usual, and invited to attend a VIP Emmy pre-party that very night in their city. The guy doing that just don't fit the description. Why, at 11:59 p.m., approximately 6 hours later, was the video footage reviewed only after my request to the lead detective for the Beverly Hills Police Department and an FBI agent to do so? Hey, wait a minute. I thought the Department of Justice was being run by the Black Panthers. If that was the case, they would have given him, like, you know, a beret or something for his bald black head and sent him on his merry way, right? No. And after being directly accused by another FBI special agent of, quote, going in and out of the bank several times complaining about the ATM machine to cause a distraction, thereby aiding in the armed robbery attempt of a bank that I never heard of or had even been to, and within 10 minutes, my lawyer was told that I was being released because it was clear that it was not me. The sad thing is, prior to my freedom being taken away from me for an easily proven crime I did not commit, I was walking back to my car by myself because I needed to check my parking meter so that I wouldn't get a ticket and break the law. In fact, if it wasn't for a text message that I was responding to, I would have actually been running up La Cienega Boulevard when the first Beverly Hills police officer approached me. Running. At which point, you want to guess what would have happened if he'd been running? I want to thank God, Robin Lola Harrison, and the NAACP Hollywood Bureau, Robert Dowdy, and Attorney J. Pearson Lynn, without whom I am certain that I would still be locked up in the custody of the Beverly Hills Police Department. Based on comments made by a Beverly Hills police officer during my booking and an FBI special agent, it appeared that they had tried and convicted me. To everyone, especially black males, regardless of height, hairstyle, or particular shade of black, Harry Williams, Michael Marcel, Reginald L. Shaw, Sean Carter Peterson, Devon LeBron, Aaron D. Spears, Cedric Sanders, Cornelius Smith Jr., Catfish Gene, Ashford Thomas, Drew McCaskill, Carlton Jordan, Jawan Murray, A.S. Lee, Bertrand L. Robertson Sr., Deron Benjamin, Hawk Owl, James Allen Belk, Jawan Jones, Daryl Dunning II, Darren DeWitt Hinson, Stephen Bishop, Logan Alexander, Michael Moore, Brandon D'Amico Anderson, John Covington, Lamar Stewart, David Mitchell, Gerald Andre Radford, Gerald Edwin Rush II, Gerald Yates, et al. I have always stayed as far away from being on the wrong side of the law as much as possible, so please be careful. If something like this can happen to me, it can certainly happen to anyone. Time has come for a change in the way our law enforcement officers serve and protect us. We all do not fit the description. And some white people wonder why there's so much anger and frustration. Jesus. I wonder if Andrea Tanteros is aware of this story. What makes me think that the easy answer is no, of course not. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Far. Because the law don't change, neither is mine, when all the could see that the high rain tide was the line on the color bar. That's just the way it is. Sometimes things are never changing, never change. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you leave down.
The Del McCurry Band, I think with a little help from Bruce Hornsby on the piano, and the now classic, The Way It Is, that comes from a brilliant, brilliant compilation called Moneyland. It's well worth the effort and the price of the purchase. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday, and I think we have proved that in rich abundance in the last hour and 26 minutes. Thanks very much to Shorty in L.A. Got a note from Shorty saying, it's been a while since I've made a contribution. I'm going to try to make up for that now. I know it'll help. Never give up. More important, never give in. Thank you, Shorty. Thank you very kindly. Shorty took care of the first two-thirds of the evening's fundraising goal, and Asa jumped in shortly thereafter, so we're actually only $40 away from finishing the evening. And thank you very much to both of you for getting us that far. Okay, I will probably never forget this now. La Cienega Boulevard. Hey, I gave it the old hillbilly college try. La Cienega. Given long enough, I probably could have sorted that out. But yeah, thank you for the pronouncer. Tim from L.A. pointing out this story sucks too because Charles Belk now has an arrest record of bank robbery and can be jammed up later in the future. Even if they expunge the record, the fact that a bald black man did rob the bank. Well, maybe he, too, is a suspect because of the arrest. Ain't that called racial profiling? See why ethnic studies are so important? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Tim, with a wider observation on ethnic studies, he said, funny thing, when I took Asian American studies, there were more non-Asians in my classes, and the classes are popular, very popular. Thing is, the district at one time said that there weren't enough students to fund the classes. They were funding Chicano studies because of the school, East Los Angeles Community College, is in a predominantly Chinese neighborhood of Monterey Park, California. Makes sense, right?
Sure.
My prof and about 50 students went to the district office hearing. She showed the size of the class, and then a white male district board member said, see, not too many Asians are taking Asian American studies. So why is Asian American studies needed? Talk about a moron. As you just mentioned, the classes allowed students other than Asian and Asian Americans to know the history, struggle, and injustice of the Asian and Asian American community, as well as our contribution to the mid-19th century, from the mid-19th century to today. My theory, says Tim, the more people remain naive to the culture around them, the more morons and teabaggers we will have. This, by the way, I will add editorially, is not an accident. Thank you, Marty. I have apparently gotten La Cienega correct. Yay me. La Cienega. La Cienega. La Cienega. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Bob, Bob, Bob. Oh, we know it's going to be a good one when it starts. Bob, Bob, Bob. You have to understand, with so few black men fitting that tall, bald description, it's an easy mistake to make. Yay, looked like that feller from them old 7-Up commercials. Remember? Ha, 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 7-Up. And this note from Timothy in Georgistan. Thanks, Bob. Subject line, celery. Thanks, Bob. You reminded me to buy celery. The moment I set the celery in my shopping cart, you mentioned it again. Ooh. I scare me sometimes. My parents and I just returned from Delta State in Nigeria, where we buried my grandfather. I wish I had the video and words prepped to share my experiences with the Horn family someday. Also, just popped into my head, Justice Ruth Race Bader Ginsburg. Ooh, that's a good one, Timothy. Sin celery yours. Oh! We're just tossing grapefruits to him, and he's parking them in the cheap seats, Timothy is. Signed, Timothy in almost privatized Sandy Springs, Georgia. And thanks to Sal. Sal is there most every evening helping out with the fundraising. Thank you very kindly, Sal. It is deeply appreciated. Deeply indeed. $35 to go for this evening's fundraising goal. Or any combination above that that gets us down the road toward tomorrow. Oh, let's see. Where to go now? Where to go? Because it is, after all, Maureen Monday. Oh, by the phone lines are open. Yes, absolutely. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. That's how you reach the program from a traditional telephone number. If, on the other hand, we are contacted up on Skype, you're always free to dial in. Well, no, not even dial in. Just make a Skype call. Bob Kincaid Horn is the account. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn. And that comes into the same place the phone number rings into. And it is easy, easy, easy. Let's check out the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
You won't mean that after you hear me talk.
What's happening, Bill?
Not much. You guys, what did she say, 325,000?
Yeah.
I think it was higher than that, Bob. I think it was about 600,000, wasn't it?
620,000, according to the study done in 1889. But I don't know if that breaks out both sides. I suspect that it does, and frankly, I refuse to consider anyone who fought for the Confederacy to have been an American soldier.
Well, that's where you and I differentiate, which you're talking correctly about brains or feelings, and I'm just saying genetics, you know.
Well, no, but American was a concept, not a genetics matter. There's no such thing as a genetic American. Everybody who fought on the side of the Confederacy had decided they no longer desired to be Americans. That's why they had to, in the wake of the Civil War, had to be readmitted as citizens of the country.
Yep. And casualties were horrible because you and I know why. The weaponry was way ahead of the tactics of the time.
Well, and the weaponry was also way ahead of the medicine.
Oh, of course, yeah. I wonder how many, you know, in fact, that was the thing they didn't have anything to do. I mean, I was up at the Antietam field one day with my first wife, who's in Iran, and they had a medical lecture. So I said, come on, you got to hear this. And man, Bob, as we went through the thing, she'd just look at me and say, the face was, my God, you know.
Yeah.
People don't know what it was like, hell. French guy, the French Union forces were still going from gas gangrene, and that was 1950s, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a horrible thing, and it's hard. Bob, it's a hard thing because the bravery of the Southern foot soldier was, how can I say something derogatory or false about their bravery? Their motivation, that's another story. Because the motivation is, you know, not too good. Let's face it. And the idea of leaving, that goes back a long way, the idea of secession, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Nickelback,
That reminds me. I'm glad you called in, Bill, because I specifically wanted to make sure that you listen to today's Dr. Bill program. Today's virtual Saturday.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll catch it if you still. This is after your broadcast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll start it up right after this broadcast ends. But I say that because I sit here producing Dr. Bill, and I learn things that I had no. Not only did I, it's not like I thought I knew it or but misunderstood it. I just flat slap didn't know it. And you know, we've got a running gag among some of us here, all about how Dr. Bill quietly goes about building his case, and then toward the end he brings out the axe handle. And just he did it today with, I mean, you know, this thing was solid oak, this axe handle. And I'm not going to spoil anything by telling you, but the fact of the matter is, it turns out that a lot of the framers of the Constitution felt fairly confident that the experiment in which they were engaging was bound to fail.
Yes.
And see, I'll make the argument that it did fail. It did.
In many ways, you're correct, Bob. Unfortunately,
what people like Madison and Gouverneur Morris and a few others, and Hamilton, were concerned about. They said that we'll be able to toddle along and get by without a monarch for a while, but eventually, in order to maintain order in a huge unruly nation, we're going to have a king. And the most fascinating part of it is that in 1829, an aging James Madison sits down and does what for that era passed as some statistical analysis, and he said that the idea of Republican government would fail in the United States by the time that the population of this country reached about 192 million people. So, lo and behold, never mind Scalia's constitutional originalism, these guys really were out there thinking about a future that didn't involve tricorn hats and muskets. But he said by the time the country got to be about 192 million in size, it would be unmanageable under the form of government that they had promulgated under the Constitution.
The population was what, around 30 million?
See, that's the homework that I haven't done yet. I don't know when we cross that 190 million barrier.
Yeah, I haven't put my finger on it either. The problem with the great Civil War authors who bring the history to me, they go out of their way to gloss over a lot of things that you and I can't gloss over, man.
Yeah.
Slaveholding is the wrong thing to do, and that's regardless of who. Indentured servitude wasn't much of a good deal either, was it?
No, it was just a different form of involuntary servitude.
I got a high mark for a term paper I did for the New York draft riots, and which paints the picture of just how miserable it was to be Irish and live in New York City. Things weren't that good for them. They were bad, too. The problem is, the economic system can make it so it's not too good for anybody if they decide to. The Depression was not what you call a nice thing, was it, Bob?
No, not at all. By the way, we do have an update. U.S. population in 1960 was 189,323,175, according to the 1960 census. So Madison was off in terms of how long it would take to get there.
Yeah.
Because he said about 140 years. No, he was spot on, wasn't he?
Yes, he's close. He's real close.
Yeah, that was a mighty, mighty, mighty well-functioning brain in that little tiny fella.
Wasn't he president during the 1812 mess? Or was he?
Yeah, That was Mr. That was known as Mr. Madison's War.
Yeah, that's the Star Spangled Banner came from a guy who was observing the British fleet assaulting a fort in Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore Harbor, Fort McHenry.
Yep. Thank you. I can't remember everything anymore. I can. Let's see, what's my name again? Now, the young lady you spoke with the other, well, the young lady to me is...
Aren't you
anybody? Unfortunately.
I was going to say, E. Pamanondas J. McGillicuddy, that's your name, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
What? She mentioned you and I conversing, and she kind of let go with a little laugh, and I'm hoping that it was not a laugh of derision.
Oh, no, it wasn't. No. Diane in Kansas, Stan, adores you.
Yeah, you and I have one of the sick relationships. We can be firing away and a pun appears, and the pun just is a way of, it's a good punch. You know, it's just another way of punching this arguments that we're getting from this woman. What was her name that you were quoting today? God, was she was.
Oh, Andrea Tantaros. Yeah, she's today's Moran.
I wonder what her ethnicity is. I kind of hear a little Greek, maybe.
Tantaros, you know, I think that is that's an old Haudenosaunee name. Her people have been in America for at least 10,000 years. Not.
Oh, yeah, right. Because, me and Greeks have gone along for years. There isn't a better restaurant in the city for corned beef hash or for chili dogs.
Chili dogs. Don't do it to me, Bill. My blood sugar's running low right now as it is, and I'm so daggum hungry I'm about to eat the desk.
There's a mix you can buy when you're through with it, the chili that comes out of it is not the chili that we usually know. It's the chili they serve in the restaurant, so they serve
Yeah, that's that sweet, cinnamony, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good taste. I found, I'll tell you what I like is, we have a lot of them in Cleveland, three or four of them. There's one great Vietnamese place and a bunch of great Thai places. In fact, I'm located really close to the neighborhood that used to be called Little Italy, and that was the bastion of some of my uncle's friends. And if some of those folks were dropped back on Earth today, and they looked at the neighborhood, because that neighborhood is a place for students, a lot of students and a lot of medical people, and they'd walk around and say, where did all these people come with brown skins? Because that place was just openly hostile black people driving through there would have stuff going at their cars. And I mean, we're talking 30, 40, maybe years ago, you know, when I was a kid, a young man. But, yeah, you hit it tonight. I mean, and the thing is that American Civil War, these guys, in fact, I just learned last year that these guys were putting together a consortium to buy goods from the French and the English and market it south of the Mason-Dixon line with their profits from the cotton trade, which were pretty damn good, those profits, weren't they, Bob?
rather.
What?
Rather, yeah.
Yeah, if you were a plantation owner, man, you were making some dough, man, no doubt about that.
Well, there was an economy that rose up around that as well. I remember walking through the ruins of old Cahaba, Alabama. And if you want to read some fascinating primary source material, just on something that isn't, there's a book out there. I think it was published in like 1919 called Memories of Old Cahaba. C-A-H-A-B-A. It was the second state capital of Alabama. But one of the things I found fascinating, one of the few things that still remain, that city is nothing but ruins now, and not much of those. But one of the few things that remain is a stand of columns that was the mansion and the store of an individual who came from, where's the horse racing area, New York, Triple Crown.
Saratoga.
Yeah. A guy came from Saratoga and set up a store and did a booming business. And every year he would go down river to Mobile, Alabama, get on a boat, and go via Cuba back to New York and do all of his buying for his store, and then bring it back up the river to Cahaba. And, you know, we're talking about textiles and all sorts of stuff. And did tremendous business until a malaria or yellow fever epidemic killed his wife, at which point he just had no stomach left for it, and he left Cahaba and left Alabama and went back to New York. Just a little fascinating bit of trivia.
There's always been a situation. Economics is a big part of the whole thing, because slavery was made because the economics of it were really good, Bob.
It worked great for the people who weren't enslaved.
Yes, sir. That's the old story. And I tell people, I said, well, I'm kind of glad I'm as old as I am, because if I live long enough, I might be the guy on the opposite side of the store, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, you got a note in from Diane in Kansas, Stan. She said, you are correct. I find Mr. Stress's comments very insightful. I always look forward to his calls.
Well, I thank you very much, because, Bob, I don't have the education that... Well, that's what happens. You know, you're living in a housing project, and you just get a job and get the hell out of there. And then this disease came along called music, and you fall into that pit and look out. You know, luckily, I had a great time, and I survived on it. So what's worse is working in a job you can't stand. That's the worst part.
Believe you me, I know a little bit about from whence you speak. Yeah.
That's like, Bob, you and I never mentioned Tennessee Ernie Ford had a, how many millions did he sell of 16 tons?
Oh, golly Moses.
And that opened my eyes to what that work was like. It was the first eye opener for the average guy on the street. That's a pretty rough way to make a buck, isn't it? And I don't know. There's so many things like that that go on in our society that they get lost, is what happens to them. They get buried by so many things. Like the gentleman that you were describing that arrested in Los Angeles. Jesus God. I mean, how can...
Wait. I mean, you know, let's not say Los Angeles. He was arrested in Beverly freaking Hills.
Yes. Yes. And of all people that have this addict, how can you work in show business area and handle people that you...
I remember a few years ago, Bill, when... A player for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I know we won't go into it. You're not a fan.
Wow.
No, a player for the Pittsburgh Steelers was pulled over late at night, and the cops wanted to know why he was driving that Mercedes. And they killed him. And they killed him, if I recall correctly. They killed him.
Really?
And this story of Charles Belt, this is Beverly Hills, California, all right? So the one thing that that story makes clear to me is that this is not a, you know, the old rubrics don't count. You know, this isn't Montgomery, Alabama. This isn't Memphis, Tennessee. This isn't Jackson, Mississippi. This is, and what it points to is this is a national problem. Now, I've got video sitting here, and it's kind of hard to get anything out of on the radio, but I've got video sitting here in front of me of a man in, and race is not clear, but it took place this past Saturday in a Walmart in Greenville, South Carolina. And you've got two police officers who, it looks like a white guy even, down on the ground, and once he's down on the ground, they just sit there and repeatedly punch him about the body and the head.
See, this is a problem that people in my racial group better get hip to, is this power thing is spreading very badly, don't dismiss it as a racial problem. Because it is a racial problem, and it's also a social problem of law and order.
And it's a class problem. It is absolutely a class problem.
Yep.
You know, what's interesting out of, and maybe in a minute I will run the audio and see if we can get anything out of it. What's interesting out of this story from Greenville, South Carolina, dude getting the stuffing beaten out of him on the floor by two police officers, one of whom had already tasered him. And you know what? Your ability to cooperate after being tasered is severely curtailed. Is that a fair statement? And so if you're laying there flopping like a fish out of water on the floor of the Walmart and the cops are screaming at you to do something and you have no control over the neuromuscular functions of your body, and they proceed to beat the stuffing out of you for not being cooperative after you've tased them, there's an issue, right? So lo and behold, a number of people were around, and it was a citizen who captured the cell phone video of these cops beating the stuffing out of this individual. The police report said he was acting erratically in front of the store and appeared to be intoxicated or under the influence of drugs.
Of course. Well, Bob, I hate to tell you how many times I have been under the influence of marijuana in my life.
Well, but here's what's interesting. He told somebody, "I'm 911." That could be somebody in the midst of a seizure.
Yep.
And all you can get out is "I'm 911." Maybe that means call 911. But instead, they tasered him and beat the stuffing out of him. Meanwhile, there are persons of color nearby that can be heard in the video saying, "Stop it. Stop beating him. Quit hitting him. Stop it."
I don't know whether it's they were going back to the old days of police work. You know, this was quite common, take him in the basement and put the rubber hoses on the guy, you know?
Yeah.
Now it seems to be, and the people who buy it are the ones that really, I can't believe them. Because you can, I remember I was stopped one time driving a friend of my home, and he had a long shoulder length hair, and of course the cop has to make some reference, "Is that my girlfriend?" And I had to bite my tongue to not say, "Why don't you go home and ask your wife?" Because I would have had a nightstick come out of my ear.
Yeah.
And a trip to the slam.
Yeah, the curse of the quick wit. And kudos to you for knowing when to keep it tamped down.
Well, you have to. I've learned that. I've been known to come off stage. One guy knocked a PA mixer over twice. And the second time he did it, I came off stage. And I hit him so hard the first time, he flew across the bar, and I picked him up and hit him again. And he flew back to where I got him the first time. Because I just wouldn't put up with the shit. My daughter was amazed. She said, "You've got a gun on the back of your ramp." I said, "Yeah." I said, "This is a place where people get so drunk they can't stagger around enough. Luckily for me, the one place I worked, one of the bouncers had been worked a helicopter in Vietnam, running a big machine gun on the side of it. And then he worked as a medic, too, over there. I knew a lot of those guys, Bob. A lot of the Vietnam vets. I knew an awful lot of them. And, of course, again, I know so damn much about the French War over there and how people were trying to get us to get into it in 54. The Dulles brothers. The same bunch of people. The same leadership class that we're fighting with now. They just, you know, I mean, people go for it. They go along with it. You hit it on the head with the guy talking to Marvelling all the time. You know, they buy it. They believe it.
But, you know what? Thank you, Bill. I want a little. I appreciate the affirmation. That's not just some little funny voice that lives in my head.
No.
You know, Emory and Marvelline are sitting there terrified out of their wits watching Fox News because Fox News makes its money by terrifying people.
Yep. I told you I did commercials for the fat man from Fox. What the hell is his name again? He was working in Cleveland, running a TV show.
Oh, Roger Ailes.
Roger Ailes, yeah. I cut two commercials that were nasty, but that was 1970. It was when Saxby was running for the Senate. So what was that, 76 or something? I don't remember now. I'm lucky I remember. Don't ask me my name, Bob. I'll forget that, too, but... Yeah, it's just amazing. I won't tie up the line anymore, but man, that woman. But this is what they're throwing out at you. I when I cruise through the, I have one of those good sea crane radios.
Yeah.
You'll cruise at night and pick up stations from all over, and they're running this crap like you wouldn't believe. And it's like this one guy who's a sports talk show host who, when I first knew him, he was doing sports talk, and now he's a regular talk show host. And he's talking about the Russian army in World War II. My father said the Russian army wasn't worth a shit. Boy, I better, you know?
Yeah.
Pick up a book on the Eastern Front in World War II. And my God, the Russian army was... We supplied them with a lot of stuff, trucks especially and such, but... The 234 tank might have been the best one of its type. And even better than the ones Mr. Porsche developed, the King Tiger and the self-propelled gun that he was behind, that little mess. A friend of mine was talking to me today. He said he just read a book on Rudolf Hess. And God Almighty, I know too much about too many things, I guess. History does that to you, Bob. You learn too many damn things. And they said, growing up on a project, man, so many fellas I'd played a lot of music with. And the neighbors, and one lady, one of my neighbors, Mrs. Thomas, she'd bring up Southern Fried Catfish. You got over that. You can get over racism real quick when they're great people and she's serving you great food. You start to forget, and playing ball with and against guys who, one guy we played with, Big John, ended up playing for the Giants for a while, for a piece of cake. That's a book I'd recommend, something that's called America's Game, and it's a history of pro football. Mr. Hallis, I saw George Raderman get his leg broken. Raderman ended up, as a sheriff of, what's the city next to Covington down there that was pretty wide open in its day?
Oh, next to Covington, Kentucky?
What?
Not, you mean Covington, Kentucky?
It's Kentucky, all right.
Oh, so...
I couldn't hear you.
Yeah.
The name.
Is that Florence, Kentucky?
No, but it was a very...
Just right across the river from Cincinnati.
Yeah, a very vice-oriented place.
Yeah.
But later on in 57, I think it was, 56, Hallis supposedly put a price on the head of a Detroit quarterback named Bobby Lane.
Yeah.
And he was injured. And the double bar face mask that they wore, the backs wore for years, was developed by a guy who knew who was Paul's equipment manager, a guy named Maury Kono. And he developed that after somebody stuck an elbow in Graham's face and did about 35 stitches worth of work. But I can't get involved with football. How do you feel about Jeremy Touchdown?
Well, that game last week against the Washington Football Club.
Yeah.
Was not exactly a sterling beginning, and yeah, I don't know. I think when you've got to sit your hopefully franchise quarterback down and say, son, listen, this ain't College Station, Texas. This is the NFL, and you don't get to flip off people whenever you want to, because everybody here in this league is as talented in one way or another as you are. And they will snap you like a twig.
Avellini was a runner, and my buddy went to college at Maryland, and he knew Avellini from there.
We've got a longtime listener to the program, my buddy Brandon from Brooklyn. And Brandon and I have an ongoing dispute. Brandon thinks that Johnny Football will be the greatest quarterback ever to hold a blown-up pig bladder in his hand. And I think he's going to be Ryan Leaf.
Well, my first trip to the Football Hall of Fame, the number one man on the list was Otter Graham. And I actually saw him on television and listened to games in 54 and 5. I was a young kid, but Paul Brown came out to this Parmadale, his children's village, quote, and he brought Graham and Lavelli and Groza with him and a big running back named Maurice Bassett. And I was 11 years old, Bob. Who was impressed? Me? Because the Indians had won 111 games or something and lost the World Series in four straight. Did you ever see any film of Willie Mays' catch?
Oh, yeah.
Dick Wirtz?
The over the shoulder, yeah.
Yes. And these men were so stupid that owned those teams. They were so stupid. They didn't want men of Mays' color and Robinson's and guy going on, you know. They didn't want them playing in their game because the people didn't like it. And, people didn't like it. People paid through the nose to see those guys play ball.
No kidding. By the way, Bill, Sal wants to know, was it Newport, Kentucky you were thinking of?
Yes, sir.
There we go.
Yep. And that's a pretty funky place, wasn't it? But Brown and Hallis, when they were putting that league together, when the American Conference was bringing in three teams, they hated each other from the word go. They played a game, I think, in 51 or 2 that had more personal fouls than any game up to that time on record in the National Football League. These two teams went after each other. And Hallis supposedly was putting the price on Bobby Lane. They caught that a couple years ago. Didn't something come out about that in the last two or three years of, New Orleans, where they were talking about taking somebody out?
Oh, yeah, Gary Payton.
So there's nothing new here, Bob. Money talks. An old man stressed he's going to hang up the phone and walk. So.
Hey, Bill, you have yourself a good evening.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Bill.
Take care, Bill.
Our buddy Mr. Stress, Bill, calling from Cleveland. It never ceases to amaze me the degree of attention that gets paid to stuff going on in this studio. Just had a note from Asa in Vancouver. Hey, Bob, I hear a friggin' cricket. Is that a bit you and Bill have going on? No. That's a real live cricket in the Horn studio. They are said to be good luck, so I'm not going to get real worked up. That's the Horn's official Appalachian August cricket. The surest harbinger that fall is on the way. In the early part of the summer, we get the fireflies, the lightning bugs. And then a little bit later, we get the scarab beetles, the June bugs. And all of these are various, and then there are some mayflies that have a hatch, some part, and for a week here, when the mayflies are going at it, I mean, the air is thick with them. They're like smoke. And then once the surest sign that summer is on the way out is a cricket. And the crickets are going at it hot and heavy. Thanks very much to Shorty. Shorty got us started this evening, and I got a note a few minutes ago saying, I guess I'll take that last bit of fundraising off your hands this evening. Thank you, Shorty. So we have met and exceeded the fundraising goal by $15. Thank you, Shorty. And thank you to Asa, and thank you to Sal. And, you know, so that means we got a little head start on tomorrow. Anybody wants to keep that going, you're more than welcome to help out. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Let's see. Shorty says, by the way, I got to have at least one habit. Mine is the horn, and that's a good habit. Thanks, Shorty. Thanks a bunch. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey.
This is Bill in Helena, Montana.
Well, hey, Bill. How are you?
Well, old, fat, and cranky, so be careful.
You know what? That sounds like the story of my life.
Well, just been listening to all this stuff with Ferguson and all the general unease with everybody. I just thought I'd give you a little, I grew up in a little town about 20 miles north of St. Louis called Alton, Illinois.
You might be surprised to know that I know of Alton, Illinois.
Oh, well, a lot of people know of Alton, Illinois, but I am surprised that you do, but I don't know why. Did you know that Alton, Illinois was one of the sites of the Lincoln-Douglas debates?
I did know that, and the reason I know of it is way, way, way back a million years ago when I was just a little baby radio news anchor at CNN, one of my dart-playing buddies was a guy we referred to as Big Tall Tom from Alton, Illinois, down there in Atlanta, Georgia. So he would talk about Alton.
Well, I don't know if the goddess of irony smiled on that town or not, but it was also the birthplace of James Earl Ray.
That I did not know.
Yes. I could, well, at one time I could take you by his house. And my whole, did you ever hear of a fellow named Elijah Lovejoy?
That rings a bell, but I can't put name to meaning.
Abolitionist, newspaper man.
Yes.
In the mid-1800s. Moved from Maine to St. Louis, had his printing press destroyed three times in St. Louis, moved to Alton, started up a new newspaper, which today is the Alton Evening Telegraph. And it was a stop. Alton used to be a stop on the Underground Railroad for escaping slaves headed north. And a bunch of abolitionists in Alton decided they weren't going to put up with his little newspaper, so they destroyed his print.
It was a pro-slavery. It wasn't abolitionist. It was a pro-slavery gang, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. It was pro-slavery, non-abolitionists. But they ended up murdering the guy at age 35 or something. The house I grew up in Alton was a block and a half from a very large monument that they erected to Lovejoy. And that was all way prior to the Emancipation Proclamation and all that stuff of the Civil War era. I think my opinion is the racism in that particular area of the country, only because I know it's fairly well. It's ingrained. It's been there, and I don't know what it's going to take to get it out.
Well, for the longest time, Bill, we thought that the passage of time would have a cleansing effect. And maybe yet that's our best hope. But if it's the passage of time that's going to wipe it out, then its effects have been tenacious. Because the era of George Wallace and Lester Maddox has come and gone. Bull Connor is in his long home. And yet you still got these cranky people who watch Fox that think that because you complain about a young man being killed in broad daylight and his body left to lay in the streets for 4 hours, that somehow that's race baiting.
Well, that kind of makes my point, doesn't it?
It does exactly, Bill. I mean, and the thing is, if it's the passage of time we're waiting for, I'm guessing Andrea Tanteros, this evening's primary nominee for Moran Monday, I'm guessing Andrea is not yet 40.
Well, there's a problem there. But that's a whole other, well, it's not a whole other discussion, but it's definitely part of the discussion of the education system in this country and how it's going to help.
But Bill, it's also an economic argument. Fox News would not be doing what it does if there was not a bunch of money to be had in promulgating this kind of thing. There is apparently there is an economic benefit to be derived, at least by News Corp, from trying to make bad matters worse. You know, there's that old saying inside journalism circles that if it bleeds, it leads.
Oh yeah.
And you know, Fox could have just reported the facts, but no, hell no. There's money to be made in hollering race baiter and claiming that the Attorney General of the United States is running the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers, the meaning of which I still don't fully understand.
Well, Black Panthers is one of them dog whistle phrases from the 60s.
Yeah, you mean words like, yeah, and words like,
I am very familiar.
And words like outside agitator?
Yeah, pretty much. It has a meaning to a certain demographic in this country, you know, and they can't. It doesn't matter that there are probably, what, a half a dozen of them at the most, and they're probably all in their 70s, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the use of the words Black Panther brings back memories to a lot of folks.
Well, it incites some sort of almost primal fear in a certain segment of white people, does it not?
It certainly does, and that's the intention. Fear is, what is it? Fear is a tremendous motivator.
Yeah.
Isn't that what the?
Well, and then there's the line from the novel Dune. You know, fear is the mind killer.
A little bit better. Yes, I wasn't familiar.
By the way,
in answer, movie, I didn't see the book. I didn't read the book.
The book is a million times better than the movie.
I'm sure, as most of them are.
Andrea Tanteros, by the way, is 36 years old. Or she'll be 36 on December the 30th. So, you know, there's an open question there. How can she possibly even begin to address issues of race and culture in this country? And if we're waiting for the generations to pass until we can heal from this national wound, it seems like the disease isn't going away if it's nicely rooted in 36-year-olds.
Yeah, but what do we do about it?
All we can do is call it out, Bill, which is, you know, what I'm trying to do here.
Well, I don't know. Another little factoid for you.
Yeah.
I used to, living in Alton, when I finally got the ability in the vehicle to drive, my friends and I used to go over to Ferguson and West Florissant Avenue. There was a Steak and Shake there that we used to cruise through in the 60s.
Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake, yeah.
Oh, yeah, buddy. Good burgers. There was a drive-in at the intersection of West Florissant and 270, which I took my soon-to-be ex-wife, soon-to-be wife, to see the movie Psycho. I'll tell you how old I am.
Well, I used to loop through, I would leave Alabama to go to college in Missouri, and, you know, that would involve driving two-lane road over to Memphis and crossing the bridge to West Memphis and jumping on I-55 and going north on 55 to St. Louis, looping around that very self-same 270 until I picked up I-70 West.
Yep.
And then it was just another 100 miles to the campus. But so, you know, I have some passing familiarity with the area, and I had a bunch of friends that it was a regional liberal arts college, so there were a lot of Missouri kids in there, and you know a number of folks from St. Louis and from KC and Joplin and Hannibal and what have you. But you tell me if I'm wrong. I don't know why anybody is surprised that there are still problems relating to race in the St. Louis area.
Oh, I don't know, other than it's just I don't know if it's a human tendency to think, well, Lincoln freed the slaves, it's over with. John Roberts says racism is dead in America, so it's over with. You know, which couldn't be any further from the truth.
I don't know why or how. The racism won't be over until we have have that really deep soul searching national moment. Until then, no. And it may be impossible in this country. It may just be impossible, and I don't like to admit that, but I think it has to be considered in the realm of potential outcomes.
Well, that's my cynicism is taking over daily, it seems like, and I'm beginning to believe that I will never see it. I don't want to say that it'll never happen but I don't think I will ever see it. It just keeps rearing its ugly head periodically, and this is the latest iteration of it. You know.
But if we say that we'll never be over it, that's still not an excuse. That's still not an excuse to give up.
Well, no, I understand that. I mean, I can only do what I can do. I view people as people first.
Right.
I know some white people that are the biggest jackasses in the world, and I will have nothing to do with them. You know?
Yeah. And
once we get to be where we can't see the color for the person, or we can't see the person for the color, I guess is a better way to put it, we're going nowhere.
Yeah, and you know, to the right wing, it is as if the only thing Martin Luther King ever said was that a person should be judged on the content of her character, not the color of her skin. Well, there was a lot more to it. But that's the only thing you ever hear from the right wing, because that provides them an out. That gives them a peg on which to hang their hat and say, well, see, that means that... That means that affirmative action's wrong, when that's not what it says at all.
Well, I don't know what, I mean, another little irony of ironies Do you know where Dred Scott's buried?
What, just a few hundred yards from Ferguson, Missouri?
Not very far. Very close to the city limits in Calvary Cemetery.
No. And
very close.
And,
but people don't, they don't have any, I don't know, any historical context. They don't see, they haven't been taught. I mean, I don't know what the reason is that they don't have it, but they just don't have it. And I'll bet you could walk out on the street today and ask 10 people who Dred Scott was. They may have heard of him, but I'll bet you that's about all.
I think you're probably, and this makes me sad, correct. Because there is, especially in the judicial history of the United States.
Oh, my God, yes.
The Dred Scott decision by Roger Taney and the Plessy decision about 50 years later.
And the Roberts decision about the Voting Rights Act. Throw that one in there.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, those two lay the groundwork. Dred Scott and Plessy lay the groundwork for the awfulness of the Roberts Court.
Yep.
When the Supreme Court of the United States was doing its dead-level dirtiest work, the modern conservatism in this country thinks that those were actually good decisions. And by that, I mean Dred Scott, I mean Plessy, I mean Lochner, I mean the Slaughterhouse cases, Schenck and Froework. It was a reactionary, hyper-right-wing court. And we have an element in this country that wants to go back to that. I mean, there really are people... let's look at it this way. You know, the right wing is so fond of that alleged Greek phrase that was used by Leonidas at Thermopylae, molon lave, which to me...
Yep.
And see, I look at that and I think, I look at it and say, what? Wash your melon? Wash your cantaloupe? This is the organizing... What? You know, but no, I guess in Greek it means come and take it. And yet, they feel that way about their guns, Bill. But if a person has a good-paying job, a good-paying union job that provides benefits and health care and, you know, in other words, the middle-class American dream, well, see, that guy doesn't get to say, molon lave, come and take it if you can. Because, see, people earning decent wages in this country, that's wrong. Nobody needs to make, no working person needs to make more than $20 an hour. You know, that's
God, I should be so lucky.
Right, but if somebody's making more than that because they're a journeyman master of their craft, whether it be sheet metal work or carpentry or electrician work or plumbing and pipe fitting, well, somehow they're violating the tenets of the America in which the right wing. Of which the right wing in America dreams, because we're all supposed to live in the dark and a bucket, I guess, because it'll make our betters happy.
Well, Bob, I don't know. I don't know. I got to say, the older I get, the more cynical I get about the whole deal, and I've come to the realization that I can't do any more than what I'm doing. You know, these people that get up and holler, vote, 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 I want to scream at them, give me someone to vote for.
Oh, yeah, you yearn for it. And yet this was part of Dr. Bill's discussion earlier today. You're locked into a box by virtue of the two-party system. And that means that if you find a candidate who's third party that you'd like to support, you know that the candidacy is almost doomed from the beginning because the system in which it is operating does not permit of third parties.
Exactly.
And it is frustrating and discouraging.
Well, I I tell you what, I shudder to think, I don't know how we're getting off of this a little bit, but that's fine. I shudder when I think of President Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, Bob.
No, you got nobody to apologize to me.
No, I'm just saying it's not, it doesn't matter whether it's her or it doesn't matter who it is. If it's a Republican or if it's a Democrat, I don't know. Last go around here in Montana, I voted for Gary Johnson. And I'm about to give up on, until the Democratic Party gives me someone to vote for. And I'm not talking about Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or, I mean, I would like to see someone with the stones to tell it like it is and mean it and then do something about it. I'm sick and tired of same old, same old. Let's get the table set for Hillary to go back into Iraq.
That gives me the creeping horrors too, Bill. And I don't know, maybe you and I come at it from a different perspective, or maybe my perspective is just wrong and crazy. But I don't, looking at American history, the last time we had a president who was really able to bring about significant, massive social change was probably FDR. The next one after that is LBJ. And in both instances, they were brought about by crises in which they really couldn't do anything else. And in both instances, particularly with FDR, FDR had to be dragged to the left. Remember, when Social Security was proposed, then Senator Huey Long said it wasn't liberal enough. And he absolutely railed on FDR. I mean, called him everything but a human being over not being liberal enough, not being left enough. With that in mind, I don't know if we're, my position, Bill, is that every 4 years we elect an imperial administrator. And to the extent that the guys framing the Constitution thought that sooner or later this whole thing would fall apart and we would have to have a hereditary monarch, I think that's just because they didn't have experience with anything else but hereditary monarchs. They couldn't see that perhaps we would become empire and that we would have emperors. See, I think the American president is more of an emperor than anything else. And I don't confine that to Barack Obama or George W. Bush. The American president has been an emperor since about the time, by my lights, since about the time of Teddy Roosevelt at the very latest. And emperors serve empires. And their sole purpose in life is to perpetuate the empire, even if the empire is crumbling out from beneath them. Does any of this make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I think we're giving a hereditary, what did you call it, a hereditary monarchy? Maybe that's what we're getting, and we don't realize it.
Well, I don't think it's, I mean, yes, and I take it you're referring to George H.W. and George W. and Bill Clinton and maybe Hillary, and I'm sure there's another Bush out there waiting in the wings.
Well, there's another Bush waiting in the wings. She's got, what, maybe another 20 years, 30 years to see what she's going to do. I mean, don't tell me she doesn't have a leg up on a lot of the
right.
Younger.
But I don't see a situation coming, because it would require a constitutional convention. I don't see a situation coming where we're going to have a formal hereditary monarch who cannot be removed from office. But what we will have is a continuing series of imperial monarchs of the or oligarchic monarchs, term limited. So you'll get done with 8 years of one, and we'll lurch back a little more to the right and have 8 years of, and then we'll lurch back a little bit less right, because I won't say center and I won't say left, because there's nothing center or left about either Bill Clinton or Barack Obama.
Or Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary Clinton. No. She has to burnish her bona fides by showing how many people she's willing to butcher.
Exactly. Plus, you've got all the little ticking time bomb neocons that were planted by Bush and Cheney. The immediate name that comes to mind is Victoria Nuland. I don't know, Bob. It's all coming apart at the seams.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I was so impressed. Was it last week, first part of last week, when you had the anonymous anarchist email?
Yes.
That spoke volumes to me. I can't believe that that person and myself, to a certain degree, I can't believe we're the only two.
Well, I don't think we are, but I think it is extremely difficult to talk in terms that are comprehensible about it and about why. I think Madison was right. I think the Republican form of government that they foresaw or tried to put in place in 1787 has been dead for a very long time. I think it died before the Civil War. It died with the rise of the administrative state. It died with the arrival of the railroads and the massive amounts of capital that the railroads were able to corral and marshal together.
Well, it was. I think perhaps the beginning of it was the actual sniffles before the flu was the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, right. And I agree because I mentioned the railroads because the railroads were that first great ingathering of power. Remember the industrial relationship between the steel mills and the production. Well, you've got to have iron ore, and you've got to have coal, and you've got to have timber, and then you've got to have a way to transport them all. And that is the Industrial Revolution is the rise of coal, oil, timber. The early beginnings of, coal, timber, iron ore, the early beginnings of prospecting for oil and the railroads. That is the Industrial Revolution in the United States.
And look where it's gotten us. It's morphed into the corporatist power groups.
And by the way, you just got a note in from the Happy Hippie Billy. Who says, me too. So I think there are a lot of people in the Horn Family Commune congregation who agree with the sentiments that were expressed by the anonymous proto-anarchist.
Well, all I can say is that was a very refreshing email, and it stuck with me. And like I say, I don't know. I just wanted to... The only reason I called was to give you a little background on the area. I'm sure it's not unique to just the St. Louis area. I'm sure there are areas of the country where it's just as bad or worse.
But still, historically, Missouri occupies a special space, but a particular space. And it's not the same space that's occupied by Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. Missouri, by virtue of how it behaved during the Civil War, I mean, there were internal coups. One county seceded all the way from the state of Missouri and declared itself a kingdom.
Well, was that in southwestern Missouri?
No. Smack dab in the middle of Missouri, just north of Jefferson City.
Okay. Well, that's right on the edge of the of what I like to call the area where the hoot owls fuck the chickens.
Okay, you get tonight's. I mean, okay, Bill, you get tonight's toaster.
Well, I'm sorry, but southwestern Missouri is John Ashcroft country, and the Bible Pounders and all that. And I was just curious as to what county that was. Well, Jefferson City's that's close enough.
Yeah, it would be Callaway County.
Callaway County, yeah. We used to drive down there to go. Oh, exploring of the natural wonders down there. Did you have some beautiful country down that way?
Oh, it is. It is gorgeous. We used to hike for hours and hours and hours and camped out some in the, the Mark Twain National Forest?
The Big Piney River. We used to go on a yearly float trip on the Big Piney River. We actually had T-shirts made. We're going to dunk our hiney in the piney this year.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was, I mean, that actually carried on into my middle adulthood. So, you ever heard of the Johnson Shut-Ins?
No.
That's one of the few, very few, and could very well be the only hard rock granite areas of the state of Missouri. It's where the current river has worn channels in through the granite rock of the riverbed, and it's a beautiful area. And those the rock formations are like on the dimensions of a water slide at a water park, kind of a deal. You know, there are big pools and beautiful place.
I'm just looking at some photographs. It looks gorgeous.
It is, without a doubt. And like I say, I grew up that area, used to run around down there and run around St. Louis. And I've been in Montana for 20 years, and I got flushed out by the 500-year flood of the Mississippi River in 1993 and didn't look back, other than when shit like this starts happening.
Well, yeah.
You know, but.
Well, you do have at least some interesting races going on out in Montana, do you not, this year?
Yeah, but it's another one. You know, the guy that Bullock appointed, the plagiarist nitwit, he's not my idea of someone that I could actually vote for, you know. And the gal that's replacing him, I don't know. And I don't know enough about her. I know Steve Daines is the Republican, and I will tell you now, I will never, ever vote for a Republican, ever. So it's...
Well, why would you? What values do you share in common with the GOP?
None.
Ta-da.
None.
Yeah.
You know, I actually, I actually did a little thought experiment for myself, and I wrote down the GOP policy impressions, the Democratic policy, and the Libertarian Party, and I found myself agreeing more with a lot of the Libertarian, you know, when it comes to foreign policy. I don't know about their economic policy, but it doesn't seem like the economic policies of the Republicans or the Democrats is worth a crap for people like you and me.
Well, they're not, but by the same, see, I can sit down and have a conversation with a Libertarian about, well, or at least it used to be this way, have a conversation with a Libertarian about social issues and agree about 90% of the time. But when they start trotting out old Ludwig von Mises and the Austrian bad acid school of economics, you know, it just leaves me.
That's where I part company with them too.
And they've been hijacked in recent years by these flat earth, flat tax jackasses.
Well, because so far that's just talk, Bob, as far as I'm concerned. It's just like the Democrats, it's just talk. One, if they ever got in there, could they do it? Would they do it? I don't know. You know? I don't know how we can predict what anybody's. I mean, I certainly would not have predicted Barack Obama would be the NDAA drone chief, you know, the whole nasty mess that he's involved in.
But see, if you go from where I am and you view the presidency as a matter of imperial administration, you not only are not surprised that he's the NDAA drone president, you expect him to be the NDAA drone president.
Well, maybe I don't think I was one of the raptured people at when he gave his, I don't know, where was it, in Chicago, but I swear, Bob, some of those TV pictures looked like the people had seen the second coming of Christ.
Well, I said way back then that the only reason that people think Barack Obama is a great speaker is they have never heard one.
Well, he's pretty slick. He makes Bill Clinton look like a piece of 80 grit sandpaper.
And but there, you know, the days of great oration are also past.
Oh.
Neither one of those individuals could deliver a Kennedy-esque speech. Neither one of them would ever come up with something like ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Neither of them, and nobody in the modern political arena could come up with we have nothing to fear but fear itself. That kind of oratory and the idea of oratory, much like we complain about civics, is simply not taught anymore, Bill. Public speaking isn't taught.
That's I understand that completely. I mean, it's a big combobulation of lowered expectations, low education, low interest people, you know, that's what I say. Give me someone I can vote for. Don't tell me who I have to vote for. Give me someone. Let me decide.
Or maybe quit giving me someone to vote against. No, I understand, Bill. You'd like to get excited about somebody.
Well, yeah, I haven't been excited since McGovern.
But see, I'm so much of a cynic that I think, and I'm not picking on Bernie here. I like Bernie. I respect Bernie Sanders. But I think if Bernie Sanders became president of the United States, a lot of us would still be in the streets saying no more wars. Because the presidency toward which one campaigns is very different from the presidency to which one is elevated. You know, and you know, the most recent proof in the pudding of that, Bill, is candidate Obama versus President Obama.
Exactly.
It's like they're two different people.
Exactly. But how do you differentiate? You can't really tell until after he's either elected or not, because he's such a slick talker.
Yeah, but you don't.
He connected with people.
But that's not the difference.
But he sure.
That's not the difference. No, that's not the differentiation you make, Bill. The differentiation you make is between him and John McCain, or him and Willard Romney. Can you imagine America had John McCain been elected? Can you imagine 4 years or even eight with Godzilla from Wasilla a heartbeat away from the presidency? I mean, that crazy woman would have gone hunting for John McCain from a helicopter. I mean, there are real things to be concerned about, and because of the BS duality of the American political system, candidate Obama versus, you know, the candidate will always be better than the president.
Agreed.
And so the only thing you can do is compare President Obama versus candidate McCain or candidate Romney.
But by that same line of thought, isn't it possible that President McCain might not have been who candidate McCain was?
Candidate McCain would have been worse, or I think. I mean, President McCain would have been worse. Candidate McCain was freaking terrifying.
Well, he has to deal with... the president can't do it, not supposed to be able to do it by himself.
I mean, imagine President McCain with a Republican House, and the only thing standing between him and abject disaster are the largely latex spines of the Senate Democrats.
I know. That's why I don't know. I listen to Malloy every now and then. He at one point here, not too long ago, was to hell with it. Do whatever it is you're going to do. Crash and burn everything. Let's start over. I mean, that's a hell of an attitude to take, but, you know.
You know what? It's real easy to go there. If I understand, and I've heard him say it too, it's not easy to go there. You know, it's taken Mike a lot of years to give up on America.
I've been listening to Mike since his IE America days.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to give up on one's country. But the more you are confronted by the reality and the more you're confronted by the facts, it seems like a place that you almost have to go. Because, and again, I back reference to Dr. Bill earlier today. The framers of the Constitution were contemplating the fact that they were putting a system in place that they felt was going to fail. And it has. And you can argue that it failed at any given number of points in time. But for me, I think this country has become a fascist plutocracy. And for me, the evidence is overwhelming that it is.
Well,
I mean, when the cops...
I don't know. I look at Europe. I look at the countries in Europe, how long they've been around and what they're like and what they were like. When I was in the Navy, I got to see a large chunk of the planet in the late 60s and early 70s. And the only time I ever encountered any hostility being an American was in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Some guy came out of a store and yelled at the cab I was in, "Yankee, go home," and the cab driver gave him hell. I mean, where are we now? We're feared.
Hated.
We're suspected. Hated. You know, I mean, it's not getting any better, Bob.
Well, no, it's not. And
no matter what anybody says, how is it getting better for anybody who is nobody?
We've become a country that argues with reality. For instance, it's possible that in the very near future, nowhere in Europe will they need to build another coal-fired power plant. China is working toward the day when they are no longer burning coal for energy. Everybody, well, okay, Tony Abbott in Australia notwithstanding.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, what?
Yeah, most of the countries of the world acknowledge that we are in a carbon-induced crisis. But the United States just sticks its fingers in its ears and screams, la, 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 can't hear you, can't hear you, can't hear you. And the next sort of futuristic question that I tend to ask, Bill, is what happens when the rest of the world, the whole rest of the world, recognizes that their existence, the existence of their citizens as members of this species, is gravely endangered by the United States? Because we've already had that survey. It was one of those semi-reputable survey outfits, one of those foundations or trusts or what have you, within the last year, asking people all over the planet, what country is the single greatest threat to peace on the planet? And it wasn't even close, Bill.
I know.
It was the United States in a boat race. I mean, the next greatest threat to world peace, they couldn't even see us. We were so far out front.
I know.
And that's not because they hate us for, because we've got home loans, like Dim Leader said. It is because we are in large part, and by we, I think it's probably better to say a significant plurality of out-and-out right-wing fascists are ruining it for everybody else. You know, file it under the general subheading of why we can't have nice things.
On a hound. They're like ticks on a hound.
Yeah.
And they've been there for a while, and they're going to stay there for a while.
Well, and
what do we do? What do we do in the meantime? I don't know.
And see, the problem is, sooner or later, when it gets full, a tick will drop off. These guys don't ever plan on having enough or getting full.
Well, it'll either drop off or it'll get picked off and tossed into a fire by the host
who
owns the dog.
Or the host will die.
Or the host will die. I don't know. I hate to leave you on such a bizarrely sour note, but I don't know what else to do, man.
Well, we can talk amongst it. It's like that line I love so much. All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it.
Well, I'll share a quote with you. I believe it was a Native American shaman. Don't think he was a chief, but his name was Black Elk.
Yeah.
You cannot wake a person who pretends to be asleep.
I'd never heard that one, but wow.
Pretty good, ain't it?
Yeah, that's good enough to get tattooed.
Well,
I've got a very short list of tattoo-worthy phrases.
Yep. I heard that, I don't know where, I read it somewhere a while back. And
well, Anatole in the chat room just posted another quote from a great American, Kurt Vonnegut, one of my heroes. Dear future generations, please accept our apologies. We were rolling drunk on petroleum.
I love Kurt Vonnegut. Do you remember when he, before he died, somebody told him he smoked too much, and he said, I've been trying to kill myself for 40 years with these things, and it hasn't worked yet.
Yep. Indeed.
I love that guy.
Well, Bill, it's awful good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger.
It's nice talking to you, Bob. I couldn't get it all in an email, or I'd have sent you an email, but...
Well, that's what conversation radio is all about. Because I know I've enjoyed this.
I would like to express my thanks to the people who regularly contribute. My financial situation doesn't allow it, so I thank everybody who is monetarily supporting you guys, because you're the best thing going.
Thank you, Bill.
You betcha.
I accept that with great, well, you humble me saying that, and I echo your thanks as well. Because that's the nature of the community we're trying to create. Thank you, Bill.
Well, Good job, kiddo. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy. Bye.
Yep.
Calling from Montana, that's Bill. And he just expressed in a nutshell exactly what we're trying to do here. Make something that everybody can participate in. So, very special thanks this evening to Sal and to Asa and to Shorty in L.A. for helping make that possible for a lot of people. Note coming in from Diane in Kansas, Stan. You commented on Missouri's special role in playing out racism today or something to that effect. Here's an excerpt from Wikipedia. It was rumored in the South that thousands of Northerners were arriving in Kansas. Believing these rumors, in November 1854, thousands of armed pro-slavery men known as border ruffians, mostly from Missouri, poured into the Kansas Territory and swayed the vote in the election for a non-voting delegate to Congress in favor of pro-slavery candidate John Whitfield. Diane says, it is my understanding that bleeding Kansas bled all the more because of interference from pro-slavery Missourians, some of whom took up residency here. The sacking of Lawrence, Kansas, comes to mind. Wow. Hear, hear. Indeed. Thank you, Diane. And thanks, one and all, everybody, for your participation in this conversation this evening. Whether you were chatting away in the chat room. We had a good crowd in there this evening. Excellent crowd. If you've never been, pop by sometime. It's a welcoming, fun place. Thanks for your contributions via email, your ideas, your calls, your notes. Thank you to Darcy over on Facebook for sorting out the population of the United States 1960 issue. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you very much to John Fox in Australia, who helps us keep the technical aspects of all of this trundling along. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You know, Ben Birch is almost single-handedly responsible for saving progressive radio via the White Rose Society beginning in 2002. 12 years doing that and never having sent a bill. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and acact.org, acheact.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.